Welcome to B2B, Boots to Books, the show where we explore the journeys of veterans and military-connected students as they navigate their paths from service to the classroom and beyond. I'm Dustin Abrego.
And I'm Rebecca Allen, your hosts. Each week, we'll dive into powerful stories of resilience, determination, and success.
Whether you're a veteran yourself, a military family member, or simply inspired by the strength of those who serve, you're in the right place.
Let's turn the page and start this incredible journey together.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of B2B. I'm Dustin Abrego.
And I'm Rebecca Allen.
How are you, Rebecca?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. People don't know because we've just been talking all morning already about various different things here. So we're going to be doing, would this be a series, I guess? I don't know.
I think so. That's kind of the plan, I think.
What was our actual working title of this, though? Would be... We had something
that I had it listed as jargon.
Jargon, yes. Okay. Yeah. So it'll possibly seem like Rebecca's quizzing me today, possibly. And then I'll get her back for another episode of this time. It's going to be higher education or higher ed jargon. Mm-hmm. I'm a first-gen college student, but I've been working in higher ed. That's what my entire career has been. That's what my master's is in, all the stuff. So I've had to learn a lot of these things. This is your first?
This is my first time working in education at all. My parents went to universities, but we didn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I went to a university many, many years ago. So
we both did at the same time. Don't date me also, please.
I won't say how long it's been, but it's been a while.
It's been a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's different between universities and even a community college.
Yes.
And just trying to understand what some of these terms mean from a professional standpoint. And mm-hmm. I realized that we have a lot of students that are probably in the same boat where they're either, this is their first time going to school, so they're learning these terms for the first time, mm-hmm. or they're either coming from a university or planning on going to a university and things are a little different. So,
and there's lots of different terms and things that maybe students don't interact with on a day-to-day, or they maybe do, mm-hmm. And they're not aware of, or the actual structure of things, or in my experience, it tends to be a lot of, unless you had a parent or a direct person that went to college and was explaining all these things to you, what these things meant, a lot of it's carryover from movies.
Yep.
Just it would be the other way around when we're going to do an episode about military stuff and jargon and stuff. It's going to be, well, this is my assumption because on the screen, it's yeah, that's garbage.
Yep.
So...
So for those of you listening in, I made a list of terms that I keep coming across either in my day-to-day job or in interacting with students or even just talking with other schools, because that's mm-hmm. part of what I need to do is work with other schools. And there is a lot of stuff that doesn't necessarily carry over for me that I want to know. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I want to start with one that I come across a lot, especially when I'm working with Central Michigan, mm-hmm. is president versus dean versus mm-hmm. provost.
Yep.
Because I know that we have a president,
yes.
and we have deans, and
yes.
I know that we have a provost, mm-hmm. and I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah. To give historical context, I mock some people that I've worked with before that would always say that, but higher education in the form that we would know it in this country really tracks from the UK. In age dating reference, people are why is it to this extent? I believe it's either Oxford or Cambridge. One of those is old enough that it existed before the Aztec civilization came
around.
Was it Oxford? Yep. We talked about this before, right?
Yep.
So a lot of this stuff is, why is it called that? It's been like that for hundreds of years. So that's where we're coming at from this way, possibly 1,000 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. So we talk about president versus dean versus provost. Really what we're getting at, I feel like president probably tracks for most people knowing what that means, especially with political state culture, or even private industry, right?
Yep.
This is the face, the person, the big decision maker, outside of board of trustees that could be elected or appointed to fit people that then direct the president what to do. Mm-hmm. When we talk dean, depending on the size of the institution, can be treated similarly to a vice president. So for scale and structure, there might be multiple vice presidents if you have a big private company, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to have a bunch of different private things within that. And dean is more of the traditional structure from carryover higher ed. And at one point, Central, I think, has now moved to deans and stuff. They had vice presidents. Some schools have a mixture. It's usually the same thing. Mm-hmm. that's one that I always think is interesting, because when I've interacted with parents that are not thrilled with what's going on, possibly in a situation, they'll be like, I'm going to talk to the dean. They usually mean the dean of students, and that tracks from like watching Animal House or something else. That's like the person that like is responsible for like student activities. But like here at LCC, there's a dean for like the individual colleges as well. So we're talking like arts and sciences or health careers, like HHS is the title of like health and human services within that. Like there's deans for that, but treated as a vice president. The provost title is one that doesn't really exist outside of higher ed that I can really track. The provost is the highest ranking academic at the college.
Okay.
So our president here, Dr. Robinson, teaches an English class on the side, but that's not within his primary roles. Mm-hmm. So our provost here, Sally Welch, she is the highest in the academic world. So like that's essentially the number two at the school.
Okay.
There can be other vice presidents, but like it goes president, then provost. If there's ever presidents that like move on, get other jobs or other things, usually a provost is interim president. They get promoted to that. So really they're like the top vice president, but they're in charge of all the academics at the college, versus you could have a vice president that's in charge of facilities if you have a really big campus and stuff. So,
okay. And the next one, I know we kind of discussed yesterday.
I felt silly that I didn't know offhand, which is really funny.
So this term is bursar.
Yeah.
And for context.
Not bursitis, right? Yeah. And it's not a medical thing. Yeah.
For context, so we have our Center for Veteran and Family Support here and other schools that will be accredited to use GI Bill. Mm-hmm. They will often have other vet services offices as well, but not every school does. So some schools, they'll go through their financial aid office or their registrar's office. And I came across a couple of schools where they said to go through the bursar's office. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what that meant.
Yeah. And I mean, we had to look it up. It was Latin for
purse.
Yeah, for purse. One who bears the purse. So like, I believe here we have a chief, like a CFO, so chief financial officer here. But that's just our structure here. But like, it would be the person that is the like financial person in all encompasses within that office and stuff. So I learned Latin the other day too, which was nice.
There you go. So I mentioned, you know, a school being accredited to use the GI Bill. And we hear the term accredited for a lot of schools. You have to go to an accredited university. You know, the school is accredited through this or through that. What does that mean? And who are they being accredited through?
Man, is that a great question, depending on what you're looking at. When we talk about accreditation, accreditation can mean a lot of different things. And I don't have the breakdown right now with me. I should have had that. If we think about it, I try to scale it to things that like I understand or maybe other people that don't do higher ed. If you get a driver's license, you are getting a license to do something through the state, right? And you are accredited within that to drive a vehicle within certain weight classes and other things and whatever, because you've passed those type of marks. And that's more state level run, but also similar to, I think the example I used the other day is when you go to the doctor, how do you know that they're a real doctor? I know it sounds really dumb, but when you think about, well, who decides and has these things? So, you know, when you go somewhere, you're not getting some snake oil person that's going to do whatever. Right. Yeah. So usually it'll say like board accredited, board certified, those type of things, either through the state licensing board. Usually medical professionals have to be state licensed on top of accreditation from their boards and other things. So when we say accredited and we're talking in the college sense, that is that school is allowed by the Department of Education to award certain degrees of a certain level. So for here at LCC, we can give certifications and associate's degrees. We are not accredited to give out bachelor's degrees. We don't offer them, right?
Yep.
And that's not what that looks like. So when we talk about that, we're looking really at two different mechanisms, right? We're talking about, because accreditation, that's the Department of Education, the Secretary of Education chooses which accrediting bodies for us and most institutions that people interact with. It's the Higher Learning Commission. That's the one that has a different accreditation. And all of it comes down to money, as we've talked about when we say like people that usually when it comes down to funding, they either have to all or nothing. They all or nothing the GI Bill, they all or nothing financial aid. And there's institutions that can choose not to, that would allow them to choose and do different things. And I'm not just saying religiously affiliated, because there's plenty of religiously affiliated, like we talked about Notre Dame the other day, like they do both of these things, right? You can have a tie and cross over with religion. No big deal. But if you choose not to do that, you don't have to follow other rules. Certain schools don't have to follow Title IX because they're not choosing to interact with financial aid and other aspects within those things, mm-hmm. which sounds like really wild.
Yeah. We had discussed the other day about schools that don't use financial aid at all mm-hmm. and what that can look like. So that was...
If you're ever in question of a school, honestly, like, there's great Wikipedia articles on the school and just seeing what's the accrediting body mm-hmm. and seeing what it is. Because even ones that you would get commercials for, sometimes they get in trouble.
Yeah.
And they get their accreditation pulled. We're in the age reference where, like, I can say that, like, ITT Tech, mm-hmm. they got in a lot of trouble because they were not following the guidelines in which to award the degrees. And they were, like, the colloquial term would be, like, degree mill. Mm-hmm. You just pay us money, we'll give you a degree. So they got in trouble, got shut down, did a bunch of stuff, whatever. And then schools after that, they don't have to take those credits either. Their accreditation, if anything, forbids them from actually giving that. We've run into situations like that with students where they're like, well, I got this here. And I go, we don't recognize that.
Yeah.
Not that we don't. We're saying, haha, like, you're not good enough. But, like, we legally can't accept that because it's like money laundering, but like credit laundering, essentially. Yeah. So
while we're still on the topic of credits, credits versus clock hours. So that's something that I know some of our GI Bill students, we mm-hmm. run into. But
when you say clock hours, are we saying billing hours or clock hours?
That's a good question. What's the difference?
So when you see clock hours, where are you seeing it?
When I see clock hours, it usually has to do with like trades, on the job training, things like mm-hmm. that.
Yep.
But I know that it can be used in other ways as well. I've seen it used in other ways. Mm-hmm. So from an academic standpoint mm-hmm. here, specifically at LCC, what could it mean?
Yeah. So when we talk credit hours, credits are the way in which we quantify how much time a course, you will get the instruction, how much time and how difficult the course will actually be mm-hmm. to do. And there's requirements within there, like we have to have teaching and stuff. Like we're talking about, we're going to be doing this 15-week semester starting in fall. So we had to adjust literally how many minutes classes are going to be, like adding 10 minutes. And I know it sounds goofy, but it all, again, comes down to making sure we're coloring within the lines, making sure we're doing the stuff that we should do overall. But when we talk credit hours, like also it's a good scale of how much time you will be spending, not just in class, but also outside of class, studying, writing papers, doing other things. Many of our math classes here would be 4 credit hours. Mm-hmm. Our pre-calculus class is a mixture of pre-calc and trigonometry. That's just a way that we had figured out to work the gap. That's 5.
Okay.
So when we look at that, and I talked to that about students, 12 credit hours, which is considered full-time for the Department of Ed and also for the VA, is comparable to like a 38 to 40-hour work week. It's not 40 hours you're in class, but it's 40 hours collectively of everything that you're doing. Mm-hmm. Not in the beginning of the semester, but like mid-semester, like you're going to feel it in certain aspects, right?
Yeah.
Of what things look like. Does that track?
Yes. Okay. So how does that equate then to billing hours?
Man, should I look that up instead of just off the cuff doing this? But I'll do that. Billing hours is also the function of what type of, you've probably seen this when we look at certain classes of, because there's the credits that you get to be able to graduate, mm-hmm. but sometimes the classes and the equipment or the expertise is going to be higher than that. And not just, you can't just throw it in course fees necessarily. So you've probably seen, like, for our aviation classes, are the bill hours and the credit hours the same?
No.
Exactly. Because it requires special facility, special training. You know, we could teach English in this room. We couldn't teach welding in this room, mm-hmm. right? We couldn't teach the power plant and airframe maintenance courses in these rooms. So it's an adjustment of that way. So it actually shows up what it looks like for bill, because you can't have it 1-to-1 ratio of credit hours, because it doesn't track. Because again, one class costs a lot more based off of equipment, and you can't just put it in course fees, because again, there's like legality around that. It's a lot of Department of Ed stuff, ruling, and also crosses over with the VA and even state mandates to make sure we're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
But really that comes down to, when we talk clock hours, and not to get people confused, because there's like, if I'm teaching a class, it's tracked in clock hours and stuff. That's completely different. It's how do you quantify someone in an internship that they did that many credit hours, 5 of credit hours worth of work. Mm-hmm. An individual of ours is in their last semester doing business internship. If they just do 2 hours for that 5, you know, that's not going to scale, right? So clock hours need to equate in some equation back up to the amount of credit hours. And there's requirements again from HLC or the Higher Learning Commission. So credit hours is the thing you actually see in your transcript. Bill hours is actually how much the stuff costs. And then clock hours is if you're doing internships and some other on-the-job site stuff.
Awesome. Okay. So we talked about having requirements for certain things. So when we get into actual classes and things like that, we're talking about prerequisites and co-requisites.
Yeah.
And I know that you have to go over that a lot with students.
Yeah.
Can you explain what those actually mean?
Yeah. So when we talk prerequisites, it's, and again, requisite, I just feel like that's a very...
It's a fancy term.
Yeah, it's very fancy for something sounding, but really it's what are the requirements, requisites, that you have to have done before you can take that course. Many times for a lot of our students, it's, we use three different levels, read, write, and math here. It could be from ACT, it can be the free testing that you get on campus if you want that. It could be your high school GPA, other things. And we like, it scales up to, okay, we know that if you take this course, you need to have X level of this. For one, for us to show that people are being passed and we're not just being jerks and taking your money. And then two, when you go to the next course, you're prepared. So it has to be this like fine balancing thing. We've gone back and forth for a lot of things. It's usually math, because math, if you get college level reading and writing, you have that for forever.
Mm-hmm.
If you go beyond for certain math, there's very, very, very few positions or things, unless you've already graduated, where you're actually doing that higher level math. You're not doing calculus in your day to day unless you already have a degree doing that. So they want you to like retest and do that every once in a while. But prerequisite could also be, we don't want you to take a higher level psychology without taking intro to psychology, because you don't have the foundational knowledge to understand what these higher level classes are. When we talk about co-requisite, co-requisites come from, again, financial stuff. When we talk here, it's that for state funding models or other things, we can't just have you take remedial classes. When we say remedial, that would be not getting up to college level. I know it's kind of like, people don't love that term, but depending on what federal office you're talking to, they still use the word remedial.
Yeah.
But not getting up to college level. If the class starts with a zero instead of like a 1, 2, 3, 4 all the way up, it's something like that. And it would help you get to college level. So a co-requisite means you have to take them at the same time. Some programs like our airframe maintenance, cybersecurity, I think has some other courses like that where you have to be doing stuff at the same time. Or for me, I know I had like a capstone class in my bachelor's where it had to be, the co-requisite requirement was it had to be my last semester. So the requirement was you have to be doing two things at the same time,
okay,
which can be really confusing.
Yep. One that I come across a lot, and I know that this has come up in conversation in our office, is traditional versus non-traditional students. I have an idea of what that means.
I want to hear your
VA standpoint.
Yeah.
But I want to know like what it means on the LCC side or just the academic side. So from a VA standpoint, traditional student is going to be your usually 18 to 23. This is, you know, they've gone from high school into college. And then non-traditional are most of our veteran, are like true veteran students, not dependents, but true veteran students who didn't go to school right out of high school. You know, they joined the military first, now they're coming back. That's how the VA usually views traditional versus non-traditional. How does that look from an academic side?
Yeah, so that would be stereotypical, and that is also a naming or nomenclature structure, because it inherently assumes that like one is better, right? That doing it in a time frame, and many of the conversations that I have with students are, I'm behind. You're allowed to feel that. That makes total sense. I felt that at different points when I was in college, for sure. It's more so treated in a, there's lots of literature and research around it. And my master's definitely like tracked over with that for like non-traditional. When we talk traditional versus non-traditional, it's an age thing. It usually comes down to at what point are you entering college versus your whole like life cycle. You can go the other way and say a non-traditional student would be someone that like, and I've met with some students here, they're 15 and they're in classes at college level. That would be non-traditional because they're like the track and the pathway that most people go about doing. And again, I equate it back to other things. And I say this because I think we just got our like, hey, your W-2s or whatever.
Yeah.
Like there's this standard deduction that applies to most people. Most people do those things, but there's a lot of other different paths and other ways to do those things. So it's not necessarily tied to any aspect outside of what you would consider in the life cycle of a human, of what we're doing at different ages, right?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of those are skewed anyway. So it's more of a, how I said I was a first gen student. My dad went to college at night, but then was like, I'm not going to finish. Mm-hmm. He was non-traditional. I choose to call myself that because in me pursuing the traditional college path, like when we both went to Central in that same year, I didn't know what I was doing and I didn't have the support structure. Not that my parents didn't care and like wouldn't talk me through stuff and other things, but they also didn't know. Mm-hmm. So it's a loose term, but really it just tracks with age most of the time.
Okay. So now we're kind of getting into some of just the random terms that I've come across. Mm-hmm. What does matriculate mean? Because I've heard that word so many times, and I don't think I fully understand what it actually means.
Where have you heard it at?
Mostly when we're talking about, like, media. Like, it'll come up in a movie or a TV show, mm-hmm. and it is there's no context around it at all.
I hate that. When we talk matriculation, it's usually, like, you applying and getting in and then getting out.
Okay.
So if you matriculated into the Army, what would that be?
So if you're getting in, so you're enlisting and then getting out is...
Right. So they don't call it matriculating in any way?
No. You're enlisting and then you're discharging.
Yeah. So it's pretty much that. Getting in and matriculate and then getting out and like going through the whole like life cycle. That's usually what it means.
Okay.
In the context for it. I can't remember the last time I've had that word brought up.
See, and that's the thing is when you mentioned when we first got started was some of these terms we just hear from media.
Yep.
And there's no real understanding of what they can actually mean.
Yeah.
Another one is practicum.
Yes. What do you think that means?
I have no idea.
Really?
When I've looked at going back to school for a bachelor's or for a master's, I've seen it listed, and I assume it has something to do with hands-on kind of stuff. Like yes. I almost equate it to clinicals, but that's just I'm at with my stuff. So
no, that's perfect. Actually, practicum, when we look at that, clinical in your sense would be different if you are pursuing psychology, because like your background's in psychology and stuff for those listening. Clinical would be like actual hours. And it's funny that you say that when we've talked about getting an intern. And for me, they would be doing practicum hours with me because I'm not a licensed counselor, right? So they'd be getting experience doing work that's either the exact thing or adjacent to it. Again, when we talk like medical and medical like related type fields like psychology and other things, they have to do clinical. So actual like with a licensed person under that medical profession. But practicum is doing that stuff and doing the thing. Sometimes it can be an internship. That's what that can look like. Or it can be like when I was at Central, like practicum wasn't set classes. It can be tied to credits. It cannot be sometimes. Mm-hmm. Practicum in this way was also like me working on the radio station at Central. That was practicum stuff because I'm doing a thing that's tied to my education and what I'm doing, but it's within like a controlled environment, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. And then one that I come across daily, I know you come across daily, is FERPA.
Yes. FERPA. Yeah. Man, people freak out about this one. The Family Educational Rights Privacy Act. As you can tell, I've had to many of things for that. I relate it many times to most people because I have them sign a release if they want to talk to me about certain things. It's related to HIPAA.
Okay.
It's similar but different to that, where I'm not federally allowed to talk about certain items. If a student is attending here, not to out you in this moment, but like you're taking a class here.
Yeah.
I can't talk about your stuff related to education to someone else without you signing off on it legally. A big part of this is, and what gets confusing, is that it doesn't mean when you turn 18. It's not like a legal thing in that way. It can be students that are dual enrolled. There's a whole other process for that. Mm-hmm. But we've had students where they're 17, 16, other things. And then parents are like this. And I go, I do it more eloquently than this because it doesn't go over well. I go, well, I can't talk to you, and then hang up the phone. It's not a good way that I'll make friends with people, right? But making sure that I can't share certain information. There's certain things you can share and certain things you can't share. Some people treat it like this horrific thing that like is going to get you, and we have to like other things, and other people can be more loose about it. Mm-hmm. But really it's, I can't share your education info with other people, even if other people ask, even if they're their parent or guardian or other things, because inherently sometimes those might not be safe relationships for those people.
Yep.
And like, and this is not like a new thing. This has been around since I believe 67, 70s. I'm going to get the date wrong, but it's around for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. For anyone listening, this your entire life, there's FERPA for, but it's for higher education only. So.
Okay. And I know we do run into that on occasion, mm-hmm. especially on my side of things. We have a lot of dependents that are using GI Bill benefits.
Yes.
And I've had to have conversations with parents who are calling in wanting to know certain things mm-hmm. about their student and where they're at in their education, things like that. And the response that I tend to get is, but I'm the parent. Mm-hmm. I'm the veteran. Mm-hmm. They're using my benefit. I need to know these things. Mm-hmm. We also have to have that release on file for that student to tell us that it's okay for us to have these conversations with you.
Right. I feel like I've yapped enough. I feel like people got the word salad of higher ed and we maybe circle back to this.
Yeah, I feel like you've answered all of my questions on this one. So,
well, join us next time because I'll be reversing it to Rebecca
yes.
of all of my military questions, which a lot of things I ask every single day. But a lot of ones were using terminology every single day. It was quite a learning curve for me too. So join us next time. Thanks for stopping in.
Thank you.
You've been listening to B2B, Boots to Books.
Thank you for joining us on this journey through the inspiring stories of veterans and military-connected students.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your community.
We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us on social media or take a listen to previous episodes at lccconnect.com or your favorite streaming platform.
Remember, every story is a step forward.
And together, we can build a bridge from boots to books.
Until next time, stay strong.
And keep moving forward.